Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 10, the topic on the docket for today. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
What's going on? Where did you, I think I've probably asked this, but how did you get dubbed fearless?
I mean, because I have to put up with you on a daily basis, so therefore I decided to give myself that fearless tag.
Interesting. And I almost didn't show up today. I got to tell you, I was writing some notes down, and I was flipping around the stations, and Youngblood came on NHL Network.
Great movie.
Night.
Great movie.
And so I said, man, it's a hockey movie. I might be able to get out of this whole situation here because I know Todd's a hockey guy. And so the note process didn't go very well.
It's all right. Well, I mean, you can always wing it. And I think I have to call myself fearless because if we give out the Cleveland Browns anymore this season, we'll just call ourselves fearless every single week.
Oof. Ugly. Although, we had a good chance at the back door last week. We were definitely a favorite to get the back door first and 10 from the 30 with an incompetent defense that's also playing prevent.
Yes, we were. Unfortunately, the best laid plans didn't come to fruition, nor did your aspirations for tea with Miss McGill. So, Unfortunately, you get to spend your Thursday morning here breaking down the National Football League. And wanted to get your take real quick, Payne, on what we saw for Monday Night Football. The Titans go on the road, win outright as 5.5-point dogs in Dallas. I mean, are we officially at the point in the season where we have to start eulogizing Jason Garrett as a head coach and the Dallas Cowboys' prospects for postseason aspirations?
Well, he's terrible. I don't think that's a surprise. We all know that. And I know we'll talk about Dallas a little later on in the pod because it is the Sunday night football game. But yeah, it's ugly. It's not efficient football. There didn't look like there was much of a game plan coming out of a bye week. That was horrible. They were force-feeding Amari Cooper. I didn't see a lot there that was overly successful. The Titans certainly were the side. We talked about that on the Monday podcast. Got the slow start, had the two early turnovers, which could have kind of dead and buried them, but they fought back. Marcus Mariota looked pretty good, got the ground game going a little bit. We thought Deion Lewis would have some nice edges catching the ball out of the backfield. That was certainly the case. So not a shocking result. I think it was kind of just shocking to see Dallas lay down a little bit. And now more injuries to the defensive side of the ball. Sean Lee, he's now out. So the stretch here for Dallas the next couple weeks looks brutal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think things are going to get any better. And when we mentioned Dallas, I want to talk about a free agent signing that obviously is getting a lot more buzz in terms of the national media than implications it's going to have on the football field. And it'll allow us for the segue to get in the actual game for that team this week. But Dez Bryant signing a one-year deal with the New Orleans Saints. Cam Meredith, of course, put on IR. We figured that was coming. Do you see Dez improving anything that New Orleans does if he's slotted as a number two or number three wide receiver option for Drew Brees?
I do. I think he can help a little bit, especially the way they pass the ball. It's more of that short, efficient passing attack. Now, he's not the best route runner, but he's physical enough to get open, and Brees is accurate enough to find him. There's just not much else there at this point past Michael Thomas, and I know, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit here with this game coming up, but I think it's a no-risk move. I don't think it's I saw this coming for a while. I've kind of been hinting at not much past Michael Thomas on this offense, and it's still operating pretty well. They're all in. This is what it looks like. They are all in attempting to win a championship. I don't think Dez is going to, you know, fuck that up. I mean, he's going to be on his best behavior for the next 2 months, so he's going to fall in line, I would think. He's going to respect Drew Brees, so I can't envision any antics happening that would screw this up.
Just circle it on your calendar. Week 13, I believe the Saints return to Dallas. So yep. I'm sure Dez Bryant, should he get into the end zone if he's schemed open, will run to the star, and we'll get all sorts of shenanigans and everything else. So it should be an interesting matchup in a couple weeks. But it gives us the perfect opportunity. And also, I should say that Dave Mason from betonline.ag will be with us, as he is every Thursday. Hopefully we get an epic rant, since that would be awesome to try and kick things off for the podcast. But let's get into some of the games, Payne. And Saints on the road at the Cincinnati Bengals. The Saints, a 5.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 54. The Bengals come in off the bye. Marvin Lewis, not exactly a sterling track record in those particular spots. But you have to wonder if at some point the gauntlet the Saints have played, they have a look ahead to the Philadelphia Eagles next week, and somewhere they have to let down and at least look human, you would think.
Absolutely. And so if you are like a spot player, a value player, you're probably going to find yourself on the Bengals this week. And I would envision, it's kind of a, sportsbooks don't like to talk about it, but when you get beat up, usually you're going to see dogs a little bit inflated, and just pure numbers based before we even get into the matchups. You know, you're looking at a game that was probably 4.5. AJ Green out, tack on another point. You're probably at 5.5. Now there's a lot of 6 in the market. And this is going to be a game that generates one-way action. So I could see a scenario where if this got to 7 on game day, at least off the screen, you're going to see groups taking a little dabble there.
And when you look at the Saints, I mean, the recent run, they, of course, have won 7 straight football games. The combined record of their last few opponents, 22-12-1 with the Rams, Vikings, Ravens, and Redskins. We know about Drew Brees, on pace to have the best season in his career. Odds on favor, I shouldn't say, co-favorites right now, Patrick Mahomes at betonline.ag to be MVP. But doing some reading this week, and you do it more extensively than I do, how banged up are the Saints in the key positions like the offensive line if Sean Payton is electing to basically sit down everybody on his O-line for Wednesday practice?
They have been a little beat up for the last few weeks. Couple guys missing games, couple guys dealing with injuries. So it's been something that's going on for a while. They knew that was a big stretch run. Wednesday, again, is the day that you probably give some guys off. Thursday, Friday are really the key days to focus on to see if guys have an actual shot to play. Those are the two biggest days. So, you know, we record Thursday morning. It's why we're always telling you, and I know people make some jokes like, you're always saying monitor this, monitor that. That's why, because Thursday and Friday are really the true indicators if these guys are going to play on Sundays. And I think if some of those guys are out, it hurts a little bit. You know, you don't want to say the Saints offense is an elite, but when you start to kind of look at what they're doing, to me it doesn't look as good as last year. 7th in yards per play adjusted for opponent, and I think that's important to distinguish because, you know, New Orleans has faced a schedule that's 6th easiest of opposing defenses. I'm not sure it matters here, though, right? The Bengals defense, just a sieve. So I would expect kind of this normalized performance that's in line with being a top 5 efficient offense. You know, it's a horrible spot. And I know that's what kind of you're hinting at. It's an outdoor game. It's 37 degrees at kick. Now, again, like, we know we saw the big play to Michael Thomas last week, and that's what people will talk about. But the Saints offense hasn't been explosive this year. Kamara, we know how great he is. He hasn't been explosive running the ball, only had one explosive run last week. I've kind of been saying this for a few weeks, and this is maybe where we touch on Dez a little bit more. Like, there just isn't there. There just isn't a lot there past Michael Thomas. Like, Traquan Smith, we've kind of been waiting for him to be that guy who buds and takes that next step. Maybe he gets better the next few weeks. It is his rookie season. He is a dynamic playmaker. He's been a little bit better, right? He's a role player, so he's been better at home. Kind of non-existent on the road. So, you know, I do think Dez can help here. When you look at the matchup, right, the Bengals defense without...
Stinks.
Yeah, it stinks. It's not very good. But then you also look like they're going to be without Darquez Dennard. They're going to be without Vontaze Burfict. They're going to be without Nick Vigil again. They also lost defensive end Carl Lawson for the season. He was one of their better pass rushers in the Bengals defense. Like, they don't get after the quarterback. 25th in sack rate, 22nd in hit rate. So if you don't get pressure on Drew Brees, whether it's a horrible spot or not, he's probably going to pick you apart. And, you know, you look at the Bengals defense, they allow a league high 28 completions per game. So if this is a game Cincinnati's going to show out, they're going to have to do some things on offense.
How much do you downgrade their offense without A.J. Green, knowing he represents about one-third of the receiving yards so far this season, a third of the touchdowns, and it forces, more importantly maybe, Tyler Boyd into being that wide receiver one dealing with elite-level corners, and now hoping that you finally get some level of productivity from John Ross, who spends more time with his face plastered on a milk carton when you try and find him than he does actually producing on a football field.
Right, and you know, when you're, where you look at those spots, you know, the Saints defense can obviously be had, and it's not usually on the ground, right? They make a, they just turn offenses into these one-dimensional type offenses. And so, you know, if Joe Mixon can't get going, if he can't find success on the ground, you then are forced to throw the ball, which makes A.J. Green even more valuable. Maybe the positive here is, you know, you do get some help from the ground game. You get center Billy Price back, Clint Bowling returns, so two starters along the offensive line. But again, where you want to attack the Saints defense is through the air. They let up 9.8 yards per pass attempt last week to the, you know, Goff and the Rams. You know, on the season, New Orleans allowed 53% of passes to great successful, second worst in the NFL. But without A.J. Green, and that's why I made him a full point this week at the top of the discussion here.
Yep.
What do you get, right? Taj Boyd, he's had the breakout year, but he's a slot guy. So now defenses kind of turn and focus on him, which you mentioned. He's more of a complimentary piece. John Ross did practice in full this week. He's going to need to be that guy that steps up. But in general, the Bengals offense has not looked the same, has not functioned the same, or been, you know, nearly as efficient once Tyler Eifert went down with that injury. That was pretty gruesome, I believe, week four against Atlanta. So, you know, we keep coming back to it. Horrific spot for the Saints, but the Bengals offense is going to have to score by moving the ball through the air here. Not a lot of win, but it's why A.J. Green is really a big loss this week, because that would have been the one spot where you could rely on potentially the Bengals just outscoring their way here and maybe losing a ball game that's 31-28 covering the game. But if you can outscore the Saints this week, I'm just not sure their defense gets enough stops.
I'm just rooting for the Bengals for separate reasons, and I'm not going to tip our hand as to why that may come into play moving forward. But interesting to note, Payne, you talked about the weather potentially being here. The Saints have actually been great away from the dome, and I think this continues to get lost because everyone thinks about the Saints and this soft football team that has to air it out and outscore you. 14-5 against the spread the last 19 times they've left the Big Easy, and when you look at the Saints, they typically raise their level of play when they take on good opponents. 13-6 against the number against teams with a winning record.
Can I add a nugget there?
Fire away.
I think it's market related, right? It's the perception that they're not good, right? But you, when you do look at the numbers and compare them to indoors in a dome, they do regress offensively. But the market, it's that idea of they're so bad away from home, the market actually overreacts to the drop off in production. I think that's why we're seeing some of those numbers. But it's certainly a great point.
Very curious to see how this game plays out, because as you mentioned, the Bengals in a great spot, but maybe just not the firepower they need to be able to match the Saints. From two teams with winning records to two teams trying to salvage their season at Lucas Oil Stadium, it's the Colts, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag, 3 even, trending towards 2.5. Total on this game at 46.5 as they play host to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jags, of course, mired in a prolonged losing skid. They went into the bye off of their trip to London. But I want to start with the number here, Payne, because we actually saw this price open with Indianapolis, a 3.5-point favorite. We talked about this on the Monday preview podcast as a look-ahead number. Look-ahead made the Colts 1.5. It opens 2 points higher, despite neither of these teams even playing a football game.
Well, yeah, we did see that little adjustment. But the last time we saw the two teams, the Colts were certainly good. The Jaguars were not. And I think the Colts are a little better than people think. We did touch on this Monday, and I kind of planned to expand on it a little bit deeper here with the longer show format. And I think partly what people aren't realizing right now is the horror story that was the Indianapolis Colts offensive line is no more. It's easily a top five O-line, and you could probably debate it as being the best. And you had Anthony Costanzo return. That was kind of the final piece to that puzzle. They went and drafted, you know, Quentin Nelson. He's been everything you would expect from a day one starter. Mark Golowinski, I'm going to butcher that name, but he has been fantastic. And then you had Ryan Kelly, who's really putting together one of his best seasons to date at center. So that group has been fantastic, and it's both. They're creating holes in the ground game there for Mack and Hines on the season. 54% of all rush attempts have graded successful for Indy. That's third in the NFL. and it's a 12% increase year over year. So the line has been great creating holes. They've also been great protecting Andrew Luck, keeping him clean, sixth in overall adjusted sack rate. And it got even better once Costanzo kind of returned from sitting out the first month. Luck hasn't been sacked in his last 161 dropbacks. And I think that's the angle that's important to talk about here, because usually when you look at these games, Jacksonville's defensive line, they own the trenches. It's their best unit. It's the one that kind of sets the tone for the game. And I know a lot of people don't like to talk about, you know, the big uglies. Everyone's ball watchers this day and age with the fantasy, you know, fantasy football in 2018. But this is probably the one of the best matchups of the entire week, is the Jacksonville defensive front four versus this offensive line. It likely, you know, decides this matchup. When you look at the Jags defense, it'll be interesting to see. AJ Bouye announced himself out. I don't know if you caught that, but it really shocked Doug Marrone. And you know, he was asked about it during his presser. He didn't know that AJ Bouye announced himself out for this game. He said, "I haven't talked to the trainer. Trainer didn't alert me of that." So maybe some bad blood there after the fiasco there in London, because I know AJ Bouye was part of the nightclub fiasco there.
No, I was going to say this Jags team just sounds like a little bit of a mess, but you hit on a key point talking about the Colts being revitalized, not only keeping Andrew Luck upright, but how good their ground game has been. I was blown away digging into Marlon Mack's numbers over his last three performances, 569 yards. Now, I know it's not against necessarily heavyweights when you throw the Raiders into the mix, but the Bills' defense is good.
Yep.
The Jets' run defense is above average, and when Mack averages 5.3 yards per carry during that stretch, it's going to give them a much more balanced dynamic. And you mentioned the Jacksonville defensive line, but I want to ask you about the other side of the ball. The Colts' defense, still a work in progress. Jacksonville, I mean, we could put an under construction sign around them, given their offensive performances scoring 18 points or less in all of their games during the losing skid, but they get their horse back. And now maybe with Leonard Fournette, assuming he's able to last through more than a quarter, they can go back to playing that physically imposing brand of football that we grew accustomed to last year from Jacksonville.
Absolutely. And I think this is the side of the ball we need to see improvement from. And it's in all areas. Like Bortles, I think, is the easy punching bag. And, you know, he hasn't even been average to this point, so I get it. But the offensive line has regressed. It's dealt with some injuries. You're on your third string left tackle. The ground game leaves a lot to be desired without Fournette. And you mentioned this, you know, he's been injured all season. He hasn't actually finished a game yet this year. The receiver core, it's not keeping any defensive coordinators up at night, I can tell you that. This has to be the breakout game for the Jaguars offense. And I think relatively speaking, it could be, right? Now their breakout game is going to look different than a Chiefs offensive breakout, but like this is a pretty good matchup for them on paper. You're going to be able to run the ball in the Colts. They allow 49% of runs to grade successful. So I would expect that heavier dose of ground and pound from Jacksonville kind of get back to what they do when you have Fournette returning and you have Hyde with an additional week under his belt in that new system. This would feel also like a spot where Bortles could have some success. There's going to be some opportunity there. That Colts secondary allowed 53% of passes to grade successful. That's dead last in the NFL. Colts also don't get after the quarterback, right? 26th in pass rush, 21st in adjusted sack rate. This has to be a competent Jacksonville offensive performance here. Their season is on the line. If it's not, they're done. You know, it feels like also like a matchup that's kind of a come down in class, because you see the Jacksonville's offense, they have faced an above average slate of defenses. The Colts overall in defensive efficiency, 22nd, but that number's come against the second easiest slate of offenses. So this is a spot where there's just no reason the Jags offense can't have one of their, I would say, best performance of the season in the spot.
Well, they're going to have to. I mean, but the players are well aware of this. Miles Jack, of course, calling this a 1,000% must win. The team can't afford to lose another game. And Blake Bortles saying, 1,000%. We put ourselves in this situation. We created this small margin for error by not winning football games. We put ourselves here. We know we still got a chance, and we've got to play really well for the whole second half of the season to go where we want to go. Home team in this divisional rivalry has covered 6 out of the last 7, but clearly a last stand for Jacksonville. We'll see if they can get off the deck in this particular spot. To a game in the afternoon time slot, Payne, out on the West Coast, where it's the Rams, a double-digit favorite at betonline.ag. Total in the game sits at 50, playing host to the Seattle Seahawks. This will be the first time Seattle is a double-digit underdog during the Russell Wilson era. As dogs of 7 points or more, they have a modest 3-0 record. When you look at this rivalry between these two teams, 6 of the 9 last games have been decided by 7 points or fewer over the last 5 seasons. And most importantly, though, these two teams amongst the best in the league running the football between the tackles.
That's probably why we've seen some under money. You know, when you look at how Seattle operates now, this is what they wanted to do, right? They hired Schottenheimer as their offensive coordinator. It signaled to the world at that point the Seahawks are now a run-first team. And you look through 9 weeks, Seattle runs it on 51% of the snaps. That's the most in the NFL. And when you think about that, right, it's a below 500 team, so they've trailed in games, which doesn't usually kind of yield a lot of runs when you're playing catch-up. So that's pretty wild to me. The first meeting, we saw Seattle keep it close. They relied on the home field advantage. They dominated the trenches on the offensive side of the ball. I think they ran for a buck 90, 5.9 yards a rush, had five explosives on the ground too. So obviously at this point, the Rams are going to be scheming to stop the run after the first meeting. And then obviously when you throw on the film, you're going to see how you would want to attack the Seahawks offense. The question is, can they? You know, I don't know if that's the case. We're now in week 10, you know, not that teams are who they are going to be, but we have a good idea at this point. And the Rams have allowed 50% of runs to grade successful. They've allowed 12% of all opponent runs to grade explosive. That's seventh worst. So if Seattle can get it going on the ground, it could open things up in the pass game. And we talked about this last week. The Rams are 29th in explosive pass defense. Their best two guys currently on the field in the secondary are Peters and Joyner. Like, both those dudes play aggressive. So you can kind of open some things up here for Russell Wilson, and he has been fantastic with play action. So if the ground game gets going, you know play action is going to happen. He's got a 140 passer rating this year on play action. That is number two in the NFL. Only Phillip Rivers better, who's got the perfect 158.3 rating. So to me, division game, run first team, maybe you hit a few downfield passes. It would appear on paper Seattle should be able to do some nice things here offensively.
How much does Seattle's ground game change and or look without Chris Carson potentially being there, knowing that in the four games Carson has carried the ball at least 14 times, he's averaging over 4 yards per carry and a shade less than 100 yards per game, and the Seahawks are actually 3-1 straight up in those four contests?
Yeah, he would be a significant loss. I know Davis has done a pretty good job, so maybe it's the full load on his plate, but you know, and I was looking at some of the play fake elements. Maybe you don't need this massive ground attack. Maybe it just needs to be formidable this week. As long as you can get that play fake element going, Russell Wilson's done a nice job. If you can hit a few explosive plays, to me, we know the game plan at this point. It's run the ball. It's why this total's come down just a hair at this point. I do think you can run on the Rams. Now, Carson would be a nice added touch. What's his status? Do we know if he's absolutely out at this point?
Just reading between the lines, and I won't claim that my tea leaves always line up or I'm a soothsayer, I would have him listed as doubtful for this game.
So, I mean, it's going to be a Mike Davis game. Maybe you see, is Penny going to ever show up, you know?
I mean, he did get four carries last week, so they tried to get Penny in the offense. The real question is, were you going to see some J.D. McKissic or C.J. Procise out there anytime soon?
Right. So, I mean, you certainly would love to have Carson in this spot against this team in this matchup. But I still think Seattle should find some success on the ground. If they can't, you know, then this gets a little bit ugly. I just question, you know, at this point, do we see kind of maybe the hangover? Like, the Rams were potentially fighting for the undefeated season, the perfect season. Do they take a little deep breath now? It's like, okay, you know, at this point, we're just a one-loss team. We control our own destiny. But, you know, the perfect season isn't there. They've come off back-to-back tough games. So it'll be interesting to see how energized the Rams are in this spot. But this feels
and
like...
And the Rams, I mean,
Seattle's
in a massive game,
right?
Game on
like
deck.
Seattle's got to show up here. This is probably their season.
For sure. I mean, this is what, when you look at Seattle, they want to try and get back to 500. The Rams have that Monday night showdown against Kansas City. So, while I know the track record, albeit a limited sample size, is there for Sean McVay coach teams to bounce back, you do wonder if this is going to be an all-in type effort. And by the way, Payne, I dug up the quote from regarding Carson's status from Pete Carroll. Soft tissue thing is kind of hanging with him a little bit. The hip thing is still kind of there, and we've got to wait and see how it comes out at the end of the week. Doesn't sound overly optimistic, so I think if you're handicapping this game on a Thursday, as you always tell our listeners, check the practice reports. I'd be operating under the assumption that they won't have Carson.
Yeah, today will be a vital day, and obviously it's a West Coast team, so we'll get the practice report later. But today, Thursday, is the big day. He is a guy, though. He is a tough guy, and he's certainly got some competition in the backfield. So that'll be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Real quick, on the other side of the ball, the Rams' offense, we know that they're run first with Todd Gurley to open so many things up in the passing game. I mean, do you trust Seattle's defense to slow down the three-headed monster of the Rams' wide receiver core if they're all healthy?
Maybe slow down. I mean, like, you're not going to be able to consistently stop the Rams' offense, right? Like, McVay just puts them in great positions. You know, they scheme for opponents, so when you look at your film, it rarely is going to look like anything you're going to actually face there. They run it, they throw it. There's a lot of just pre-snap commotion. And you look at the overall numbers, LA's second in overall offensive efficiency. It kind of aligns perfectly with their opponent yards per play, adjusted for opponent, rather. That's also second in the NFL. The Chiefs' offense is really the only offense that's better. They're number one in both those categories. So, you know, you do have a Seattle defense that's starting to show some signs of improvement. I know some guys actually, and this is crazy to say, have Seattle fifth in defensive efficiency. I don't see that. That's a bit aggressive for me.
All right, I'm not going that far.
Yeah, I mean, they're 14th in rushing success rate, 22nd in passing success rate defense. They give up just a gob of explosive runs, 29 in 8 games. That's the third most in the NFL. They're average getting to the quarterback. So, you know, I'm not going that far. They faced a slightly above average schedule of offenses. It's not some murderer's row. So, you know, if you excluded the first Rams game, it's probably been a below average slate. So, you know, again, maybe this is the spot where the Rams exhale a little bit. You would think if Seattle has a chance to win this game and cover it, it's got to be a game where they hold the Rams into the high 20s. That would be the way to potentially sneak a win out here.
And when you look at Seattle, too, it's no coincidence. I mean, this team, fifth in the league in terms of points per game allowed at 19.5, but when they surrender more than 20, they have not won a football game yet this season, albeit winning outright a little bit different than covering as a 10-point pup. So I think that's a very fair assessment, saying if they can hold the Rams to, let's call it 28 points, it'll give them a great opportunity to get you to the window with a dog ticket there, catching those double digits. But from the Sunday afternoon game to the Sunday nighter in, where the hell were they playing this game? Philadelphia, where the Eagles are a 7-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game sits at 43. These two teams, Payne, will meet twice over the next 5 weeks. They've split their season series in each of the last 5 seasons. And, of course, the matchup to watch, a top-5 rusher in Ezekiel Elliott versus the league's number 2 rushing defense. Philadelphia enters this one off a bye. Dallas on the other side of the coin with a short week.
Yeah, and, you know, offensively for the Cowboys, it's meh. Right? Like we broke this team down in full, I think, Monday night in that preview. So not a lot's changed in 72 hours. You know, kind of going to the extreme move where Jason Garrett fires his O-line coach, Paul Alexander. That was apparently going to change everything, Todd. Nope. 3.6 a carry for Zeke. A lot of the guys who break down film for a living are, oh, do you hear this? In the back.
I hear the landscapers are out there.
It is not. This apparently is the final day of this kitchen fiasco. So,
you know, Payne, this is what happens when you have like an 8,000 square foot kitchen like you do, that's akin to being on Top Chef or Chopped or some of the big shows on Food Network. I mean, it's a long, elaborate process to get you up to speed.
All right, so back to this game. And if you look at some of the film, and guys break it down better than I do, they have been bashing the Cowboys for how they run the ball, the formations they're running from, and a lot of their blocking principles. Like, it's ugly. You know, we talked about Dak and maybe using his legs. He had 2 runs. You need to have like 5 to 8 design calls a game. They were trending in that direction. Jason Garrett out of the bye with less creativity than he went into the bye with, which is tough to do. That wouldn't have been a tough bar to overshoot there. He's now getting his balls busted for kind of dicking around in LA for a few days during the World Series during the off week.
Well, I watched that offensive game plan, so clearly he must have been collaborating with Dave Roberts, knowing how Dave manages pitching staff throughout the Fall Classic.
Now listen, you typically can't run on this Eagles defense, and they are still number 1 in adjusted line yards for the season. But one thing in the NFL, you really want to start to parse out some things like in quarter blocks, 3-game blocks, kind of gives you a vibe on how things are currently going. And so the last 3 games, there's been serious regression for the Eagles' defensive front. They've allowed 6.6 yards per rush, 59% of runs have graded successful over the last 3 games. So maybe the Cowboys' ground game does get going here. In general, though, you know, you need to expose the Eagles' secondary. you know, have a lot of success on this defense. Dak is going to have to make some plays in the pass game. We saw Monday night, it was clear. Jerry Jones was like a 12-year-old kid on Christmas waiting to play with that, wanting to just play with that new toy, baby, in front of the world. And I think partly because he has an ego, right? And everyone's been busting his nuts about how much it took to land Cooper. So they force-fed Amari the ball. Maybe that works here. I don't know. He had 8 targets on Monday night. That was his third most of the season. Only 58 yards, though. And again, one thing that's key when you look at a lot of wide receiver metrics to see if they can create separation, it was an anemic 1.66 yards per route run. And you had Dak forcing him the ball in the end zone, which caused the pick. So, like, surface area, I saw all the fantasy goobers on Twitter. They're like, oh, 17 fantasy points. The underlying metrics weren't pretty there. So maybe just, you know, targets are an indication of fantasy production. So if he's getting targeted 20 times, like, that might be good for fantasy guys. It's not really good for an offense. It's not really good for an offense that wants to be efficient or successful.
Well, and this is a Dallas offense that's now scored 20 or fewer points in 6 out of 8 games this season. The only two teams that fall into that same distinction, Buffalo and Arizona. The Cowboys are on pace for a team's worst total offense, 317 yards per game, since 2002 when Dave Campo was the head coach. Payne, I got a $5 bill with your name on it if you can name one of the two starting quarterbacks Dave Campo used for the Cowboys in 2002.
Dave Campo. Man, that's a tough one. I feel like, and I don't know his name, I'm going to butcher it, and I'm not going to. There was the Georgia quarterback there, number 17. Yep. What the hell is
look
his
at
name?
You, look at you over there. I don't Quincy know his Carter. Name.
Quincy Carter. There you go. I got
Quincy Carter and Chad Hutchinson were the quarterbacks there, and I'm pretty
the Michigan
sure Jerry
product there.
I'm pretty sure Jerry didn't go on radio saying he was going to give either of those quarterbacks an extension, much like he's going to do for Dak. But that's a different discussion for a different day. I want to ask you a little bit about the Dallas defense. They're allowing less than 19 points per game, 3rd in the league. Sean Lee looks to be out again. He just can't stay healthy. But with Van Der Esch, clearly it's not anywhere close to the same precipitous drop-off. How do you see Dallas's defense matching up with an Eagles offense where Carson Wentz is actually posting better numbers in 2018 than he did in his quest for MVP last year, the addition of Golden Tate, but an Eagles offense that really lacks a running game that you have to respect?
Yeah, the Sean Lee loss, certainly you'd love to have him out there, but it isn't that drop that you mentioned in the previous years with Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith, right? Thank God that kid fully recovered. Took 3 years, but he has been absolutely dynamic. So Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith grading out 2 of the top 10 linebackers in all of football at this point. When you look at how the Eagles should attack the defense, it's probably through the air. Right, Dallas is 20th in passing success rate defense. The Eagles offense likes to pass the ball efficiently in that intermediate window, which should work here. Golden Tate, I think, is a very good fit for this offense, who uses a lot of 3 wide receiver sets. They're getting horrific production from that position out of Nelson Aguilar. For the Lions, you know, I don't know if they were smart, they would run 2 wide receiver sets. That's where they're most successful and efficient. So it shouldn't, the Tate loss for the Lions shouldn't really matter, but it does because they still run 3 wides. You mentioned Wentz playing at a world-class level again, and that is 100% spot on. It looks like he could get some help with Lane Johnson returning this week. Darren Sproles appears to be back this week as well. He could play a nice role in this game, right? We mentioned on Monday, Dallas has issues covering running backs. After Deion Lewis went berserk, Dallas is now allowing 81% of running back targets to be completed for a hair under 8 yards of reception. So maybe Sproles has a nice role in this game. We know when he was just coming back from injury that Monday nighter against Atlanta, they were force-feeding that dude. Weren't even going to work him back in slowly. So maybe we see a lot of Darren Sproles this game. I would certainly use him in the pass game because Dallas just can't defend running back passes right now.
Hey, I want to ask you one question last on the Philadelphia defense. I mean, when we look at their overall numbers, this team is 2nd in the league against the run, only allowing 83.8 yards per game. But when we talk about advanced stats and trying to dig in and unpack the different storylines that are there, they're 21st in yards per attempt allowed. Are teams just not committing to the ground game enough against Philadelphia, being able to take advantage of them?
Well, that's kind of what I referenced when we were talking Eagles defense. They were fantastic to start the year. The last 3 games, they've really regressed, again, allowing 6.6 yards per carry. So I think that's where we're seeing the full season metrics that you were looking at. Some of the success rate rushing metrics haven't been quite there either. I'm looking at this right now. So on the season, we are seeing 18th and success rate rush defense. And again, it's mostly come in the last 3 weeks. When you look at the adjusted line yards, they are still number one on the season. So that's going to be interesting here. Can the Cowboys offense get that ground game going if the Eagles defense looks like it has the last couple of weeks? If you can't, then it's reliant on Dak. If you can have your offense be multiple, that would go a long way here for the Cowboys. And what's interesting here is my core number is right around this opener. It was like, you know, a hair under 7. We're now at 7. So not a ton of value in the number, but for like all the yards per play guys who, you know, that's all they focus on, you'd probably find some value in Dallas simply because they're actually a net positive this year and the Eagles are dead even in yards per play net. So, you know, that wouldn't correlate to a 7-point spread, but I think there's a lot of underlying matchups that should yield properly here, I think, for the Eagles to have some success.
And all is not lost for the Dallas Cowboy fans. If history is any indication of what we'll see on Sunday night, the Road Warriors have performed exceptionally well over the last 10 meetings between these familiar division rivals. Road team going 8-2 against the spread in the last 10. We do have one other big game to get to, and arguably the biggest game of the entire NFL Week 10 slate. But before we do that, we have some business to attend to. It's the part of the podcast that you've been waiting all week to hear. We welcome in Dave Mason, who joins us every Thursday on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, we know this was one of the worst weekends of the season for the sports books. You gave me some of the games that didn't fall the house's way, and it amounted to about 9 of the biggest outcomes. How bad was it for betonline.ag this past weekend?
Well, let's talk. Sunday was a disaster. We got curb stomped. I mean, you know, you take the whole weekend. College, like I said, it was really good. Thursday night football went our way. Monday night football went our way. But Sunday was a complete disaster. I mean, 9 out of 11 decisions were for the players. And then those two decisions that went our way weren't even that big, huge, weren't big decisions at all. Dolphins and Chargers. But yeah, I mean, the players, I mean, four massive, massive decisions on Sunday, and they all went the players' way. The Chiefs, Patriots, Steelers, and Vikings all went the players' way. All big-time decisions. And like I said, the only decisions that went our way were Dolphins and Chargers, and they weren't, you know, they were just kind of mediocre decisions. But, yeah, the Titans and 49ers, thankfully, Thursday night football, Monday night football, help us get some of that money back. But yeah, record-setting day for the players on Sunday.
Absolutely incredible. I know a lot of our listeners love to watch some car wrecks from time to time, and unfortunately the collateral damage becomes the bookmakers and whatnot. So from our perspective, we always hate hearing it, but I know our listeners every now and again get a kick out of it, unfortunately.
No, absolutely. It's name the game. And, you know, what I've been, you know, telling people is like, you know, those first 6 weeks are really good for the house. And I just knew something was coming. You know, it was just too good, too good. And it came in a wave of 3 weeks in a row. I mean, that first week, I guess that was week 7 when we got killed on that Sunday. I mean, that Monday night game was huge for the house. So that was kind of a push for the weekend. Actually, I think we ended up winning a little bit. Then the following weekend was bad, good for the players, and then this last weekend. So 3 Sundays in a row for the players. So I knew it was going to kind of come back down to earth, but I didn't think it would come back down to earth this much. But, hey, that's the way it works on to week 10.
Dave, just a quick question going back to last week. When you have a situation like that, and you said you've lost 3 weeks in a row in the NFL, is there maybe a discussion on the odds floor this week when you have your recreational bettors just loaded to the gills with money in their accounts? Is there a discussion of potentially inflating some underdogs this week, maybe by 0.5 point or 1 point? Do we see that situation potentially unfold this week?
Not really. I mean, they just, the odds guys just keep doing their thing. You know, they just, you know, we always discuss on this podcast about long term, right? You can't really let the short term impact you too much. As long as you got the deep pockets, don't start playing games. You know, just keep doing what you do. Keep doing what you've been doing the last decade or whatever, what got us here. And don't worry about a few weeks. You know, we got the deep pockets to cover it. No problem. Bring it on. And then, you know, all these numbers correct themselves. When we're winning too much, it will correct themselves. When we're losing too much, it will correct themselves. So just keep trudging forward. And, you know, there's still much so action to be played. It's not like, you know, like a Super Bowl, for instance. When you get killed on a Super Bowl, you know, it's like, holy hell, we're not going to get this money back. There's a, all these football guys are going to be gone until next September, and Lord knows how many of those guys will be back next September. So here it's like, you know, we got all these games left. We've got big college games up. The bowls are right around the corner. Then the playoffs, then the Super Bowl. So there's plenty of time to, for these players to keep betting. And then, so, you know, it's, yeah, I bitch and moan, but, you know, in the back of your head, it's all good. It's bring it on.
And when we talk about what the players are betting, what does it look like so far in terms of some potential big house decisions and then maybe some early sharp action as well?
Yeah, sharp. We got Seahawks plus 10, minus 115 or better. That's currently plus 10, minus 130. Colts under 47.5. That's 46 now. Rams at under 51.5. That's now 50. Chargers under 50, that's now 49. Bills plus 7.5, minus 110 or better, that's plus 6.5. Buccaneers minus 2.5, minus 110 or better, that's currently minus 3. And Panthers tonight at plus 4.5, that's currently plus 3.5. Public, huge sweats again this weekend, holy hell. Falcons, 93% are on the Falcons, 86% are on the Saints, 91% are on the Patriots, shocker there. 74% are on the Bears, 89% on Chargers. One dog in there. 77% of the early actions on the Seahawks, and 87% of the action is on the Eagles Sunday night.
Absolutely incredible to hear some of the same usual suspects up there on the board. Always makes for a fun Sunday, I'm sure. And Dave, just want to know, and I know a lot of these players may not need to try and reload their accounts or even start afresh, but what kind of promotions are available at the shop this weekend?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, you want to get in on the fun, the fleecing. Don't miss out on the fleecing the last few weeks. Head on over to betonline.ag, sign up for an account, use promo code 75BTB. On your first ever deposit for a 75% welcome bonus. You already have a betonline.ag account and have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet. Use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload. Max bonus is $1,000 on each. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Everybody loves a free money giveaway, and that's what's been going on for the house over the last couple weeks. You can follow Dave on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. There are no better rants from that side of the counter anywhere in the industry. Dave, best of luck this weekend, and may you turn all those red figures into the black.
Thank you, fellas. Have a great weekend.
I mean, that wasn't the best Dave Mason rant we're ever going to get, Payne, but you could tell there was a little bit of disdain in there for all the public sides that cashed over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. He was a little salty.
Eh, it happens, I guess.
He's got to get over it. We've already gotten over it.
Yeah, I mean, you get we give you about a 24-hour grace period, and then you have to try and move forward in this business. And we'll move forward into the Thursday night football game, where it's the Pittsburgh Steelers playing host to the Carolina Panthers. You're looking at Pittsburgh, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game at 50.5, Payne. And we have seen some money come in on the pup in this spot.
Yeah, and I think it's probably to do with Carolina's offense. I think it has to be, right? And, you know, it's been a pleasant surprise, I would say, from all angles. Cam has matured a bit, I would say. You would hear stories previously how he would kind of just show up to the building like 5 minutes before team meetings. He's now the first guy through the doors. So I think that's been a positive. Norv Turner has shockingly been good. I hinted at this on Monday. His son, Scott Turner, the quarterback coach, is a huge proponent of analytics. So I think he's been vital in getting dad to kind of adhere to the times and change his ways a bit. And as much as he's bounced around, I think, the last few years, like, it shouldn't have taken much to fix some things, right? Like, if you're constantly being fired or unemployed, it's time to change some things. I think the combination of all that, Cam and Norv improving and whatnot, they're right now ninth in adjusted yards per play, top 10 in both rushing and passing success rate. Cam is getting the ball out quick. He's been hit the least amount of times in his career, so I think that's a positive. And, you know, we go all the way back to the preseason podcast. The organization didn't really want Cam absorbing too many hits so they could prolong his career a little bit. But if he's getting hit less in the pocket as a thrower, maybe you're willing to design a few more runs per game, something Cam's very efficient at, something that he's just an absolute nightmare to prepare for, you know, for opposing defenses. So I think that's a big thing. Pittsburgh's defense, though, man, they've been good recently.
They're playing real well against the run. I mean, just allowing 275.5 yards per game over the last month. Clearly, some of their foibles or whatever we want to call them, inconsistency early on, has been rectified, at least to the untrained eye.
Yeah, and you know, they've done a good job stopping runs up the middle. They do have some tough times stopping the exotic stuff, some pitches to the outside. You would think, you know, the Panthers offense, if they are going to run, and they run a lot, fifth most run heavy team, that it's going to be more of some exotic runs. But Pittsburgh's defense has been really good since week five. They're top five in both rushing and passing success rate defense. In that same sample window, they've done a great job negating explosive plays. Just 7% of opponent passes have graded explosive. Joe Hayden, he has reverted back to being like a true shutdown corner. I think the Steelers also changed the way they play defense. They've really simplified things. We'd kind of talked about them being out of position a lot, not being prepared, being maybe too exotic. It's changed. It's really just this, and it'll sound stupid. It's see ball, run to the ball, hit the player with the ball kind of thing right now. They have upped their blitz rate a ton, and because of that, top 10 now in both sack rate and quarterback hit rate. If they care tonight, they can get some pressure on Cam.
When we look at Pittsburgh's offense matched up against the Carolina defense, clearly the Panthers have been a unit that's susceptible to the big play against high-profile passing attacks. I mean, Carolina, I mean, I know we talked a little bit about some of their offense and what's changed. It's still a team that averages less than 11 points per game. Excuse me, 11 points less per game on the road than at home. Their ground game bogs down a little bit. But when I look at a defense that's top 10 in takeaways, tied for 7th, and a third-down defense that's currently 8th in the league, if Pittsburgh protects the football and they try and take advantage of Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown and they find balance with James Conner, does Pittsburgh have the pieces offensively that can put this Carolina defense on skates?
So, you know, the only way Pittsburgh doesn't have success moving the ball is if we get one of those like Steeler no-shows, which happens a few times a season under Tomlin, and I'm not a trends guy. But unless it makes sense... Right, I'm not a trends guy unless it makes sense. And this one, to me, would, right? You see a lot of these no-shows for Pittsburgh. Where do they happen? They happen after a physical Baltimore rivalry game. And the line would indicate that there's maybe some potential for that. If that doesn't happen here, I think, you know, as you mentioned, like Pittsburgh's going to go up and down the field because we have Carolina's defense, one of the most overrated in the league. Like, it's a middling unit in terms of overall defensive efficiency. You know, they've played a slightly below average schedule of offenses. The secondary is just a massive problem, as you pointed out. 23rd in passing success rate defense, 21st in explosive pass defense. Their best cornerback is James Bradbury. He's average at best. They have had huge issues defending the slot, so Juju should have a ton of success tonight. We know Big Ben performs significantly better at home. And with this matchup, I would think he's got plenty of time to kind of identify the right matchup and deliver the ball. His offensive line has been lights out this year. Big Ben, lowest hit rate of any quarterback in the NFL, a hair under 9%. He's only been sacked 3% of the time on dropbacks. That's the second least amount of time of any quarterback. So, you know, you have a Carolina defense that doesn't get after the quarterback, bottom third in the NFL in sacks, Todd. So there's going to be ample opportunity if Pittsburgh cares in this spot. And you would hope maybe that gets negated because it is a primetime game. It's in front of a national audience. They do have the advantage of being the home team on the short week. So you would hope that they do show up here. But Pittsburgh's known to throw in a stinker or two.
Have you been surprised that this number has trended towards 3? I know we haven't quite arrived at 3 flat. There's plenty of 3.5s out there. But some pretty prominent shops sitting at 3 minus 20.
A little bit, yeah. Now, I am, as people know, I'm not as high on Carolina as most. And even with that being said, our core number here was like 5.5. So the open was certainly a touch high. I didn't expect to see a second wave at 4.5. And that was the case. So it seems to be a pretty significant position. Now with 3, right? And again, I know a lot of people be like, hey, just pick the winner of these games. It is just, it's a different world being able to get 6, 6.5, 7 minus 20 than 3. So there's not a lot of wiggle room here. But both these teams should have success moving the ball. Over 50 and a half, because 51 is a key. 50 and 50 and a half was a pretty sharp position for multiple groups. I would think it's got a good chance to go over. Again, the way this doesn't go over, and I'm not saying anything, you know, I don't think this is abusive or mean-spirited or mean-hearted, because even, you know, the Panthers' entire organization knows this.
Well, it's always good when you it's always good when you preface a comment that way. I have no idea what's going to come out of your mouth next.
If you can get front-runner Cam going, he can't be stopped, right? This is an MVP Cam. If he gets going early and he starts doing the dancing and the antics, you're not going to stop him. He's as good as Breeze. He's as good as Brady. He's as good as Aaron Rodgers when you get front-runner Cam going. If he starts slow, he becomes a different dude. The head starts to sag a little bit. He's looking at the sidelines as if it's everybody else's fault. If front-runner Cam gets going and the Pittsburgh Steelers do care, the game will fly over. The only way this game doesn't go over is if it's that combination of both front-runner Cam not getting out to the lead and the Steelers kind of no-showing. So that's what's kept me off this total is that combination potential.
It makes a ton of sense, and maybe a live opportunity will emerge as this game plays out. But clearly one of the marquee matchups for an otherwise dull slate of NFL action this weekend. Last order of business, Payne, though, before we close up shop and bid our listeners a fond farewell until we reconvene on Monday morning with the Week 10 recap show. Best investment of the week. Where are you sending us this weekend?
Let's go with 263, the Jacksonville Jaguars, plus 3. That is the widely available line here. This feels like a decent matchup for them. On paper, this you got to love the quotes. You've mentioned a couple of those. This should be the all-in effort here. Now, certainly Indianapolis, I think this is a spot for them also to show up. But, you know, I think their ideas and thoughts on this season, based on how Wright's operated, you know, going for it in the Houston game, this was all about building for the future. So this is a huge game for Jacksonville. I think they get it done. I think the plus 3 is huge here. Now, we need a win here in the NFL because we've been flipping coins in the NFL with the best bets. College has gone swimmingly. It's been fantastic, but we need an NFL winner here.
And we'll get there.
This was tough because this was an ugly week. Like, I don't like this board at all. I think it's going to be an extremely low-volume week from a lot of professionals. So this was one of those weeks where it's tough to find a best bet here on first thing Thursday morning.
Plenty of podcasts left. We can rattle off, you know, a 5 out of 6, 7 out of 8 type win streak. So,
and honestly, it doesn't matter even if we went 0-17. Small sample size, but you know,
there will be no talk. There will be no talk of 0-17 futility around these parts. I will not allow for that kind of negativity to invade our podcast, Payne. It just won't be allowed. Special thanks to Dave Mason, who joins us every Wednesday and Thursday throughout the football season. You, of course, can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. But most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Go to iTunes, 5-star reviews, offer up your comments. We'll have a contest coming soon. Payne, any words of wisdom, parting shots, jabs, whatever you want to get out there, speak now or forever hold your peace.
No, that's it. Week 11, NFL, the main podcast, will be doing the iTunes giveaway. So get those 5-star reviews in, leave a nice little sentence. If you do, you're automatically entered for a free Bet the Board swag pack. So it's a Visa gift card and some Bet the Board gear. We'll announce that on the big NFL Week 11 podcast.
Jacksonville Jaguars, the Fighting Doug Marrones, backing Blake Bortles against Andrew Luck Sunday afternoon.
And once the Jags... that way.
I mean, I want to try and make everybody a little more nervous if we can.
Just messing with you. Let's get out of here.
And once the Jags win that game outright, we'll see all of you at the window.